Welcome to the Food Freedom Habit Podcast, where you can find freedom from food crazies using nothing but your own brain. With me, Lydia, the Lifestyle Coach. Would you like permanent food and body peace without tracking one trigger or calorie? Whether you're dealing with overeating, binge eating, bulimia, food obsession, body hate, or the endless diet cycle? We do all this without delving into past trauma, starting yet another food plan, or monitoring every meal. Live a free life aligned with your health and values. If you're ready for something real, you're in the right place. All episodes are 100% free, so please subscribe to and review our podcast. This is Lydia, the Lifestyle Coach, and so excited to come with you with another awesome interview today. And as you know, here we talk about gaining complete freedom with food, full recovery, total freedom, just getting rid of all the food crazies and just to finally be at peace and be happy. As you know, LydiaVideo.com and the ebook at LydiaLifestyle.com are both tools for you there. And then every week we have a new video on Mondays. And today we have a special guest back on the show, and we're going to delve into some really, really neat topics. So today we have back with us Isabel Foxen-Duke. I'm so excited to get into this conversation. You guys are going to love just the important topics that we're talking about today. We're just going to have a really great time, and just wanted to give her a little bit of an intro here for anyone who might not know who she is already, but everybody knows who she is. She's famous. But she is the creator of Stop Fighting Food, a free video training program for women who want to stop feeling crazy around food. After years of trying to overcome emotional eating, binge eating, and chronic weight cycling through traditional and alternative approaches, Isabel discovered some radical new ways to get women over their food issues once and for all. Not just by shifting the mindsets of individuals, but by challenging the dominant diet culture as a whole. Her writing and free guide, How to Not Eat Cake, can be found at her website, and I will put a link down at the bottom, and you can watch her free video training series. So look in the show notes for a link to that. And so excited to have Isabel Foxen-Duke on the show again. Welcome. Hello.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. It's so fun to be here. A pleasure as always.
Well, I'm so excited about the topics that we're getting into today. I know that we're both just passionate about these things, and it's just going to be so fun to just hear your knowledge, and thank you for sharing and being here. So let's just start out. I would love for us to just hear, what is your personal story about how you got here? I know we're going to be delving in today about, of course, you know, food issues are always something that people are looking for answers for. I think that there's some amazing newer solutions, you know, that you and I have, you know, talked about on past interviews. But we're going to be linking those today into how it relates to body image specifically. So just your own journey with, you know, food issues, specifically body image. Would love to hear, what is your personal story? How did you get here?
Yeah, so anyone who's familiar with my work will know pretty quickly into learning about what I do that body image is a huge focus, right? And actually transitioning from most women who have food issues are running around either constantly feeling like they can't stand their body, they want to change it, they hate their bodies, lots of feelings of self-loathing, right? A lot of these issues are often what are driving our underlying food issues, or just even potentially feeling like, oh, just the malaise of my body's not good enough, my body's not good enough. That sort of, without being too obvious, right, kind of is what underlies a lot of these issues, right? We want to change our bodies for some specific reason, right? And so it's not super not obvious to see how body image can be driving diet binge cycling, right? Or dieting, period. And I would make the argument that there is no, that very, very rarely do people diet without falling into diet binge cycling or falling into weight cycling. That is absolutely sort of the general experience of most people, right? And so I think that there's a lot of focus in the emotional eating world and the world of binge eating, right? In the world of people who are talking about solutions for these issues, often there can be there's a strong focus on food, obviously, but we don't necessarily always talk about this feeling that or these body image issues that are driving these issues, that are driving even our behaviors with food. I think a lot of women, I know I personally, for years thought that body image was not something that I had to work on, even when I was in clinical treatment for binge eating, right? I was in clinical eating disorder treatment at one point in my life. And even when I was in clinical treatment, I didn't necessarily take doing body image work, meaning trying to do my best to change the way I felt about my body. I didn't take that seriously because I just assumed once I get my food under control, I'll be thin and everything will be fine and I'll have the body that I want and I won't need to worry about it. I don't need to do body image work because once I get my food under control, I will have the body of my dreams and I won't need to worry about it. The problem is that this body hatred is actually fueling diet binge cycling, is actually fueling lots of things that transition and turn into eventually things like emotional eating, things like binge eating. I make the argument in my work, right, that it's actually pretty impossible to overcome a lot of these issues when we hate our bodies and when we're dealing with body self-loathing. And that's a big, big part of the work that I do. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that that's a big point that we need to be hammering home for women who are struggling. So many women sort of approach overcoming diet binge cycling or emotional eating the way they approach other diets, right? It's like, oh, once I get the magic solution to emotional eating, binge eating, whatever, I'll be thin. And they kind of, we have this sort of diet-like attitude towards approaching this problem, when in reality, negative body image is very, very much the underlying root cause of a lot of these things for various reasons that, you know, we could get into. But I think that that's definitely a core part of my work. As far as my personal experience, again, I'll just repeat, you know, I think the last time I was on the show, I went into a little bit more detail about my story, long history of diet binge cycling, and landed up in binge eating disorder rehab, have been through the gamut of years post rehab, just trying to figure out the solution because quite frankly, lots of different professionals are giving different kinds of solutions to this problem. There's not a lot of consensus about what to do about it. We can get into why that is in a moment. But yeah, a lot of it has to do with weight bias, which is, again, underlies a lot of our negative body image issues. So it's sort of a cycle. It's this, you know, cycle between societal expectations of weight, internal body hatred, into diet binge cycling, disordered eating behaviors, right? Including binge eating and emotional eating. And then this feeling of, well, once I get over that, I'll be thin, so I'm not gonna worry about my body image. And the cycle sort of repeats. And that's, I'll pause there. Yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that. There's so much to parse out there. So I'm excited to look at that. So one thing that I know comes up so much with, you know, the work that I do, the women that I talk to, there's this idea, like one that you mentioned, like, oh, okay, well, I'll just get my food stuff under control and then I'll be thin and everything will be awesome, right? Like that wishful thinking of like, that's the driver, right? Okay, I'll get my food issue and then my weight will fall off. The other big thing that I see a lot, and I would love to hear your perspective and you to speak to this, is, okay, like the whole, you know, I need to get my food under control, but I have to lose the weight first because I can't just like, you know, let go of restriction and all this. Like I've just got to get these 40 pounds off or these 20 pounds off, and then I'm going to deal with my food issues, but I can't do that now because I'm not okay with my body, right? So why doesn't that work?
I personally relate to that. And I have so many clients. I used to say this, I'd be like, I'm just going to go on one more diet, lose the whatever number of pounds, and then I'll pursue intuitive eating or quote normal eating or whatever the thing is, right? The non-diet approach. Ultimately, again, there's a few different things that are problematic about this thinking. It obviously keeps people in the cycle because the reality of the situation, it's called the diet binge cycle because if you diet, binging is a reaction to dieting. There's no such thing as I'm just going to diet and then figure out how to maintain it, right? If we're dieting, the binge eating is going to come as a reaction, kind of whether you like it or not, probably for most people who struggle with binge eating, right? I mean, I think that, again, there's the 5% of people who somehow are able to manage to restrict for, you know, years on end. they are a huge minority. And I would make the argument, I've never met a woman who struggled with binge eating on a regular basis who has somehow one day magically grew the muscle to diet. In fact, when we talk about diet binge cycling, I think that when people talk about sort of the 5% of successful dieters or whatever, what's interesting about that group is that the more a person's diets, the less likely they are to be able to sustain and succeed, in quotes, at a diet. Right? So actually your ability to diet gets worse and worse over time, right? If you're already in the throes of binge eating, like the chances of you just like, again, somehow successfully sticking to some diet or somehow dieting and creating some sort of like long-term weight loss success are basically the same as you like sprouting wings and flying. So it's a trap, right? It just like keeps you in this, it just keeps you doing the same behaviors over and over again and expecting different results, right? There's really only one way to change your relationship with food, and that is to directly change your relationship with food right now. Cut your losses. Another big metaphor that I use to describe this is like the gambler metaphor, right? So, you know, a gambling addict, I mean, dieters, people who are diet binge cycles very much act like gambling addicts, right? So I'm going to the casino and I bet $5 because, you know, whatever. That $5, no big deal, just for fun. All my buddies are at the casino. You know, it's kind of how dieting starts. Like, oh, like I can lose 5 pounds. You know, go to the gambling. I go to the casino, bet $5, and I lose my $5. I'm like, oh, well, like now I got to win it back at least, right? So now I'm going to bet another $5 to try and win back my $5. Now I'm down 10, right? And I just, the cycle just keeps going on and on. I keep trying to, you know, I keep basically doubling down, hoping just to win back my original investment. And I just keep digging myself further, deeper and deeper into debt until, you know, my kids' college fund has been dried up. And this is how sort of gambling addiction continues on, right? And so dieting is very, very similar. It's like, we just keep thinking like, oh, well, you know, I just need to get back to my original weight. I hear that a lot. Like, I just want to get back to the weight that I was before I started binging, or I just want to get back to, you know, and there's all sorts of rationalizations for this idea. I always say to people, look, dieting isn't working for you. There's only one thing that you can do to change your relationship with food, and that is to actually, There's only one thing you can do to reach whatever quote unquote healthful weight you're meant to be at, which by the way, will be different for different people. And I think that we should come back to that point because I think there's this idea that we're all meant to look like Gisele Bündchen and that's just not true, right? But whatever healthful weight that we as individuals are uniquely meant to arrive at is the weight that we will arrive at when we are quote unquote behaving naturally, normally, mentally, healthfully with food, period, right? So, I think that that's really important. It's like change your relationship with food. When your relationship with food has changed, you will arrive at whatever weight. When you are mentally healthy, in other words, when you are mentally healthy, you will arrive at whatever whatever weight is physically healthful for you. And again, I think that the body image work sort of comes into play when we also have to be realistic and recognize that that doesn't necessarily guarantee you any specific body. Although to be quite frank, dieting doesn't either. Right? Dieting doesn't guarantee you any specific body either. Dieting is honestly, it's just a steep rope up, down, up, down, up, down on the way up, usually for most people, for the vast majority of the population, and certainly for binge eaters.
Yeah, beautifully put. And I think that one factor that doesn't get nearly, there are a couple of things. So first, I love what you said about like the only way to change your relationship with food is to like change your relationship with food. Like, right. It is amazing to me how there is a whole industry and a whole, like all of these treatments, like all the traditional thinking about cures for changing your relationship with food have nothing to do with a direct approach. Like you and I have like a direct approach, like, oh, you don't like your relationship with food. Let's change your relationship with food as opposed to, well, let's delve into your past. Let's make sure you're eating on this perfect diet. Let's find the perfect blah, blah, blah for you. And it only costs $4,000. You know, it's like, it's these sort of all of these peripheral solutions that aren't solutions at all. So I think it's so interesting how the direct approach is so, we're like these fringe people that are like, hey, if you want to fix something, you should fix that thing.
I think a lot of people are beating around the bush, which is that our unhealthy relationships with food, our negative thoughts and beliefs around food, are actually given to us by society. They're given to us by, quote, diet culture, right? Which is just literally, you know, when you walk around, you're constantly hearing these very specific thoughts and beliefs about food. First of all, you're taught that dieting works when we know that it doesn't, know that there is, like, literally just hundreds of that millions of dollars worth of research to show that it does not, right? And so, and when I say it doesn't work, I think that I want to be specific about what that means, because some people say, oh, dieting works. I've been on a diet and I lost 40 pounds. What do you mean dieting doesn't work? What I mean is that it doesn't work sustainably, right? You are not probably capable of overcoming your biological instincts around food for very long, right? Like, I can hold my breath for a short period of time. That does not mean that I can therefore control my breath, right? Like, that does not therefore mean that I am capable of holding my breath forever. It just means that I can hold my breath for a temporary period of time, right? So humans are very similar with food, right? Like, I can control my food. I can restrict myself. I can deprive myself for a short period of time. I might even lose weight for a short period of time. But at some point, I will lose that ability to control my biological instincts, right? Like, if I'm holding, I often also just, you know, compare it to having to pee, right? Like, if I have to pee, I can hold it for a little while, but at some point I'm going to piss my pants, right? And so, and I think that that's really what we're talking about when we say that dieting doesn't work. So yeah, so we're running around in the society that basically is telling us that diets do work. You should have the capacity to, you know, overcome your biological instincts, control your body, effectively hold your breath or hold your pee for, you know, in incredibly long periods of time, theoretically, sustainably, forever. And that is obviously not the case. And these kinds of thoughts and beliefs sort of get into our psyche. Obviously, you know, one of the big things is, you know, if you're not able to do this, you suck, you're lazy, you're undisciplined. We go into all of these different character and moral judgments about people who aren't able to hold their breath forever or aren't able to hold their pee forever, right? And I'm using this as a metaphor. But, and so I think that when we talk about diet culture, right, I just wanted to get clear of what diet culture is, right? All of these different people are saying all of these different things about us, right? People who have food issues, they didn't pop out of the womb that way, right? We were trained into all of these different thoughts and behaviors. And I think what's really cool is some people, right, are coming out of the woodwork to say, actually, you know, this is a screwed up, dysfunctional way of thinking about food that isn't rooted in reality and is causing a lot of different problems, both physical and emotional, for people. How about we start actually teaching people to think about food in a way that is rooted in reality, that is actually physically functional for them, that actually respects and honors our biology, et cetera, right? And our emotional health.
Yeah, beautiful. Yes. One of the best choices I ever made in my life was when I chose mental health over physical fantasy.
Yes, exactly.
Like, I'm crazy. Yeah, was like more important. And so, okay, there are a couple things I would love to go down these paths. The first is just that what people don't talk about, which is so important, which is the, like, the biological factor of this. And then I would love to go into like diet culture and kind of what that means and what that looks like. So mm-hmm. With the biology piece of it, I think one thing that doesn't get talked about is, you know, something you touched on, like, you can't control your body. Like, we have this idea that all I need to do is this and this, and if I do it right, I can have whatever body I want. You know, it's like, oh, I want to change my hair color. Will you go get it dyed? You know, like, we kind of think of, like, this is one of those things that I have the option of being fat or thin. You know, it's like, so one, the biology, and then how it fights back. Like, I don't think that people a lot of times realize, like, when you diet, when you restrict, mm-hmm. your body, like, there's mechanisms in your brain and physically that drive up your hunger and your cravings and your craziness. And even that, like, tiny percentage that you talked about that can, you know, maybe be okay for a while, somehow just keep on restricting. Like, those people have mental costs, right? Like, there are so many women that I coach that are like these models of health, right, in their worlds, even like symbols of fitness. And they have serious issues with just obsessive food thoughts all the time. So tell us a little bit about why changing our biology doesn't work. Like, why can't we just be thin if we want to be thin? Why can't we choose the bodies that we want? Why can't we do the right workouts and eat the right food? Like, why doesn't that work?
I think that people fundamentally forget that we're biological creatures, right? I think we're so conditioned, again, by society, by the media, by diet culture, we're so conditioned to think about our bodies as ornaments, right? For the purpose of looking a certain way, right? The way I change my clothes, I change my hair color, I think that's a really great parallel. We're so conditioned to think about our bodies that way that we actually dehumanize ourselves. We forget that we are actually animals, right? And so I think that there's this, and we're being told that, right? Again, it's not our faults. We didn't pop out of the womb feeling that way. We were very connected to our animal instincts as children, right, as babies, right? But over time, society has conditioned us, and particularly conditioned women, to really like sever this like understanding that we are animals with animal instincts, and that food and eating is one of the primary, most basic animal instincts that there is. And we forget that, and we're so trained into thinking that this is just like simple input, output, you know, I do this thing, I get this physical result for the purpose of looking this way, right? So I don't even necessarily think, I don't think very many people out there are consciously thinking, oh, I'm going to try and overcome my biological instincts right now, or I'm going to try and like overcome my animal instincts around food. I think that we forget that we're animals at all, right? Like we just completely forget that we have biological instincts. We forget that food is a biological instinct, not dissimilar to breathing, not dissimilar to peeing, not dissimilar to things like sex, right? I mean, how many times, I mean, we very openly in our culture talk about that sort of sexual repression can create a lot of sexual malady, right? And problems. And it's food is just another one of those examples of these sort of natural animal things that when you screw with them too much, when you shame people around them, that causes a huge amount of problems. I mean, I think one of the big issues with poor body image, right, is that shame in and of itself is something, from my personal perspective, is a form of deprivation. It's a form of restriction around food. When I am, you know, eating chocolate pie or whatever, but I feel like, and I'm, you know, I'm physically allowing myself to eat what I want, right? I see this all the time. I'm physically allowing myself to eat the chocolate thing that I want. But in my mind, I'm thinking to myself, I suck. I'm such a disgusting fat pig for eating this. I can't believe that I'm doing this. Like, oh my God, I'm so out of control. This is the worst thing in the world. All hell has broken loose because I'm eating this pie, right? And a lot of people who are just transitioning intuitive eating feel this way. They're like, I'm letting myself eating the pie, but this is a disaster. I'm so terrified that I'm doing this. I can't believe I'm letting myself, right? Those thoughts and feelings, all of that fear and all that shame around eating the pie, basically, you might as well be restricting it, right? Like it's a form of emotional deprivation because, right, and for those of you who are just curious, the reason why this is so problematic is when I'm shaming myself, when I'm judging myself, when I'm telling myself inside that I shouldn't be doing something that I am currently doing, right? The implication is I should try not to do this tomorrow, right? The subconscious implication without even having the conscious thought of it is I should try not to do this tomorrow, which basically puts me in a state of Last Supper mentality, right? So many women approach intuitive eating and they basically are like, I'm eating all the chocolate in the world. Why haven't I stopped yet? I still feel as out of control as ever. And most of their problems, I think, have to do with the sort of idea of emotional restriction. Like when I judge and shame myself around what I'm doing, the implication is that I shouldn't do it in the future. Tomorrow my food will be different, which effectively puts us in a constant state of Last Supper mentality right now. Now, all of this to say that shame never helped anyone change their relationship with food. And I think that shame is just an example of like, when we shame ourselves around biological instincts in general, it can lead to a lot of problems, which is why I brought up the example of sex as well. So I think that this is sort of like the idea, right? Is that food is something that we should be able to explore naturally in our bodies, like the way children do, rather than having it tried to be controlled by social and societal expectations, which can really, really, it's destroying women's relationships with food straight up. Like it is, in my opinion, the root cause of all dysfunctional eating behaviors.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so non-intuitive with the messages that we get in society. You know, we think like, oh, well, this comes up all the time. This idea of like, oh, well, if I ate anything that I wanted, I would just go crazy and I would just eat bread and chocolate all day long and I would be so bad, right? When in fact, like if you really truly ate anything you wanted without deprivation, you would just eat how you were designed to eat, Like,
yeah,
that's it. But there's no sort of messages to reinforce, like, that it's going to be okay. And I love what you said about, you know, that Last Supper mentality. You know, if you feel bad about what you're doing today, it's automatic that, well, I shouldn't do this tomorrow. And the other thing that I think is good to mention here is, like, the sort of cravings that are created from the deprivation in the moment. Like, I always use the example of, like, okay, I'm going to tell you, after 4 o'clock today, there is no more ice cream. Like, it's gone. It's just gone from the planet. Like, it's over. Mm-hmm. What do you want more than anything right now?
Ice cream.
Right. Obviously. Because it's like, even if you didn't want it before, and a lot of people don't draw this connection between, like, as soon as you can't have something, then there's this craving that is driven up by it. Right. So there's all sorts of different factors that are just crazy here.
Yeah, so a kid in a toy store being told not to touch the toys.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden it's like,
Great. But on a deeper level, if you think about, again, coming back to biology, on a deeper level than that even, right? Like, a lot of our psychology, right? If you think about just like evolution, right? And like where humans have come from, a lot of our psychology revolves around doing our absolute best not to starve to death, right? I mean, we've had a food surplus, right? We've had like a bountiful amount of food where fatness was even like remotely considered a problem for maybe 100 years. Probably less, right? I mean, like very, very short period of time, blip in the radar of history. For thousands and thousands and thousands of years, basically for the history of human species, the main thing that our psychology has been designed to do is to help us not starve to death and to hoard as much food as we can to prepare in any kind of threat for famine, right? So again, if we are living in a society where like food is bountiful and there's plenty of good food and we're not worried about famine, like it's cool. But if there's any part of us that's worried about famine, if there's any part of us that's worried about being deprived or worried about the food being taken away, we will hoard it, right? We will so hoard it, right? It's even deeper than I'm the kid in the candy store being told not to touch the toys, right? It's like goes back to, you know, your psychological biology is really designed to do everything it can to make sure you hoard as many calories as possible if it even smells deprivation, right? If it even smells restriction, if it even smells effectively the possibility of famine and starvation, which is how your body understands dieting, right? Your body doesn't think, oh yeah, she just needs to like lose a few pounds in order to like look the way society tells her to look, right? Your body actually like experiences dieting deprivation as a threat to your survival. Again, going back to biology, right? Dieters too often, I think this is the biggest problem in our society, is we dehumanize ourselves. We totally forget that we are human animals with biological instincts, and that is really what is driving so much of diet, so much of the sort of diet industry, diet culture that's screwing us up.
Yeah. So anyone within the sound of our voice, just like, no, like if you're feeling these feelings of like, why am I just so obsessed about food? Or why do I just want it all the time? Or why am I eating so crazy? You know, it's like back to that idea of biology. Like I remember when I was, you know, bulimic and just completely obsessed with food all the time, I stumbled upon this article about like these people who were in some camp and they were starving and they were just talking about their experience and how they thought about food and how they were so obsessed about it and how that. And I remember thinking like, that's so weird. That's the way that I feel. And it was like, I still hadn't made that connection between, oh wait, it's because I'm starving myself that I feel this way. It was all attributed to, why am I so weak? Why can't I get a grip? Why do I have no self-control? So we attribute it to all of these like, oh, what's wrong with me? As opposed to like, this is my biology. Of course I feel this way. It's this, of course you would feel this way if you're starving yourself, right?
And so many people think, oh, I'm not dieting. I'm eating all this food. I'm binge eating. How can you say I'm starving, right? But the thing is, again, there's this emotional component, which is like, if you feel like shit about yourself for eating a certain way, if you're experiencing shame, if you're experiencing guilt, if you're experiencing basically any range of emotions that tells you that eating a certain amount of is not okay, or that food should be controlled, food has to be controlled in the future, I have to get this under control in the future, all of those feelings put you into Last Supper mode, right? Like if I think, okay, tomorrow I promise I won't do this again, right? That's just psychologically puts you into Last Supper mode right now. So it doesn't even, it's both physical and emotional. I mean, I think that that's really important to hammer home, because so many people, especially when they're new to the non-diet approach, make the mistake of thinking, well, maybe if I eat enough brownies, I won't want brownies anymore, right? Or like that's somehow the answer to this problem. When really this is, you know, physical deprivation, obviously physical hunger is a pretty hard thing to overcome long-term, right? Biological instincts 101. But this is also emotional. And I think that we need to deal with that in order to really change our relationship with food permanently, which of course circles back to the body image conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was going to talk about, like, you know, you said we didn't come out of the womb this way, you know? So where do these messages come from? Like, talk a little bit about how society, why the pressure, how it loops in with body image. Like you said, we had these thoughts put in our heads. Why is that so important in our society, especially around women, and where do they come from and why?
I mean, this is a huge, huge conversation. I mean, I think that there are so many academics out there who've just made their life work into studying this conversation, right? Of like, where does this thin ideal come from? And like, how did it come to be? What we know is that it came to be in, again, very recent history, right? People will not be surprised to know that prior to maybe 100, 150 years ago max, right? The fatness was what was beautiful, right? Like plumpness was what was beautiful. Probably because it was harder to become fat. You had to be wealthy, basically, to be fat back in the day, right? Now we have the opposite situation, right? So we know that this thin ideal is not that old. And we know that it's probably related to things like class, right? And the way that our sort of agriculture structure has been built, right? Obviously, you have a situation with industrialized agriculture where all of a sudden, the really high caloric foods are now the cheap foods. And the more expensive foods, actually, right? It is actually more expensive and it requires more wealth and affluence to eat vegetables on a regular basis, quite frankly, and to do things like work out on a regular basis, right? It is generally speaking, there's definitely a huge correlation here between class and weight, right? And so that's sort of how fashion works. I mean, I think that a lot of fashion, and if you think about sort of thinness in society, right, as just sort of being, as historically, I mean, it's only very recently that we've even talked about it in the context of health. Historically, people have wanted to be thin for fashion, right? Again, this changes sort of in like maybe the 70s, 80s, but for the most part, right, people have wanted to become thin for fashion. And people still want to become thin for fashion, right? Like that is, I think, very much the driving force because of stigma, right? Because of social stigma, because of social status. We want to chase thinness. We think if the more thin we are, the more people will love us. I'll get the husband and I'll get the kid, you know, I'll have all of the things. Everyone at the PTA meeting will love me or whatever. My mother will approve of me, dot, 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 right? That, I think that that's a primary driver for most people. And then more recently, we've sort of had this conversation about health come up, which has been a really interesting sort of political conversation that's very much tied into the stigma, which I could get into a whole nother ball game. I will probably not touch that right now because that's also a very complicated conversation. But yeah, I mean, I think in general, when we talk about fashion, whether it be bodies or anything else, you know, very much tied to class, very much tied to gender politics, which also probably is not surprising. I think that it was Naomi Wolf who wrote The Beauty Myth. She's a very, very famous sociologist, writer, right? Women's feminist writer, who basically said dieting is a tool of oppression to keep women effectively obsessed with something other than creating productivity in the world, right? And so, you know, if I'm dieting and I'm basically self-starving myself, that's a pretty good way to keep me down. Like, keep me obsessed with my own self-violence, right? Keep me obsessed with self-starvation. It's like, I can't think of a greater tool for patriarchal warfare, right? Like, it's just like, it's like, I am literally doing it to myself. I am literally keeping myself dead, right? And again, I don't want to blame women at all. I mean, I think women are absolutely the victims. Again, we're kind of brainwashed into this, right? I mean, women have, I think, been historically dependent on male approval by virtue of the fact that we couldn't vote, we couldn't work, like we actually needed male approval to survive for so long, right? And so that is, you know, sort of whatever the beauty standards have been historically have been really quite a big deal. Like, women have not been vain in the past to care about beauty. Women really depended on doing whatever was sort of dictated to them by men in order to survive for a very, very long time, basically until, you know, sort of women's rights really came to be, right? And sort of civil rights really happened for women. And so, yeah, I mean, again, very, very complicated topic. I could talk about this for hours. I could write a PhD thesis about this. But to answer your question, right, the social issue of fatness and weight is just really a function and sort of an intersection with social issues around class, gender, race, which I didn't talk about, but it's certainly related to race as well, right? And so all of these things kind of intersect and work together sort of to create sort of the system of social oppression in which we currently live. So yeah, I'll stop there. I'll pause there. Very complex.
Oh, absolutely. I think there's so much here. And what really resonates just for me is just the feminist issue of like how oppressive it is and how just unknown it is. You know, it's like there's so many women, including, you know, myself not that long ago, where it's like you put on your own chains, you maintain your own chains. It's like, and it's all just wrapped up. Like, I think it's so beautiful when I can help a woman be free of food issues because they have their brain back to do all these things. Like, there are so many women that have great aspirations and goals and are mission driven and literally are working with so little mental bandwidth because so much of it is taken up by food. And you free that up and you have like this army of amazing women that are like ready to create things in the world. I think it's just so, so important. So let's talk a little bit about kind of defining what we're talking about here. Like when we say body image or body positivity, or what exactly, how you would define that, Isabel, and why that's important.
Yeah, so the term body image is literally just a term to describe how we feel about our bodies, right? So a person can have more negative body image, a person can have more positive body image, a person can have neutral body image. Generally speaking, if you think about body image as a spectrum, you know, zero being, oh my God, I hate myself so much. I, you know, do not want to leave the house. I want to just completely just like cover myself up with a sheet at all times. And probably that person is struggling deeply with their relationship with food as well. Not surprisingly, right? All the way to, oh my gosh, I love my body. I'm so sexy and awesome. Unfortunately, because of the society in which we live, most women really struggle to be anywhere near the positive end of the spectrum. And I think that is, again, very much, you know, we can do so much work to try and get ourselves as close to that positive spectrum as possible. But it is incredibly difficult, even for those who are recovering or who are recovered with a D at the end, right? Even for those who are recovered at the D at the end, it is so incredibly difficult to live in a world where basically everyone is telling you, everyone is arguing with you that your body is awesome, right? Everyone is telling you, no, you got to change that. You got to change that, right? The vast majority of the people on this planet are being told that either directly or indirectly, right? So for example, and when I say directly or indirectly, I mean, you don't necessarily need to be told by someone, oh, you look fat today, in order to get the message that your body's not good enough, right? You don't need to be told that explicitly or directly to get that message. You're getting that message every time you walk by a Beachbody billboard ad. And so yeah, directly or indirectly, we're pretty much all being told that our bodies are not good enough. And so it's very, very, very difficult to have these like incredibly positive feelings about our body. I think we talked about this a little bit earlier before we started this interview. I think, you know, as far as recovery is concerned, just getting people to neutral is really, you know, where a lot of healing can happen. Just getting people to acceptance of their bodies is where a lot of healing, particularly with food, comes from. One other way that I've sort of described this is like the difference between body acceptance and the difference between body love. Right? So body acceptance is, I accept my body. This is what my body looks like. I get that I'm an animal. I get that I'm a biological instinct. I'm not trying to fuck with my food. I'm pretty clear that that's a really negative thing that will probably not serve me in the long term and will probably only be harmful to me long term, right? So I accept my body. I'm cool with it. It's okay. I'm not going to go fucking with food, you know, in a way, in an attempt to change it. I see how that is probably going to backfire long-term. And I'm just going to let that one go, right? I'm cutting my losses at the casino on that one. That's body acceptance. really healing our relationship with food pretty much just depends on body acceptance, right? I mean, body acceptance is really what helps us heal our relationship with food. We get to the point where we're like, I'm cutting my losses on the diet industry. Like, we're good. Like, I'm going to let my biological instincts do their thing. I'm going to accept my body for who she is. Awesome, right? That's where the food healing comes from. Anything beyond body acceptance into body love, right? Where we're like, ooh, and like, I actually think I'm really sexy. And ooh, like, actually, like, I kind of look cute in that short skirt that I was mortified to wear a year ago, whatever. That's all sort of like gravy that makes our life better, right? Like, it's that's the type of thing where it's just like, I want women to love their bodies and I want women to sort of edge as far down the positive side of the spectrum as they can, because it improves the quality of your life, right? Obviously, it's so like great to walk through life thinking that you're sexy. It's great to walk through life thinking, you know, oh my gosh, actually I look really cute in this dress. But as far as food healing is concerned, I think body acceptance is really sort of like this critical step. Because when we reach body acceptance, which is different than body love, and to some extent is easier to attain, right? Body acceptance is where we stop fucking with our food. And that's, I think, what's really kind of like the big hurdle for people struggling with binge eating and all of these other sort of dysfunctional behaviors with food.
Yeah, absolutely. And just, you know, speaking of, you know, that body acceptance, like I think that something that comes up a lot is, well, how can I accept my body how it is right now? Because my body's not okay. Like I'm overweight. I'm like, you know, whatever the list is that makes it so, this idea, this pervasive idea of I need to create a body that I can be okay with, and then I'll work on body acceptance. Because there's this idea has been so vilified of accepting our bodies if they're not okay. You know, it's the giving up, letting yourself go. You know, whatever it is, there's just so much negativity around that. So how would you speak to that as in this idea of, well, I have to create an acceptable body first and then work on body acceptance?
Well, again, I would say letting go of something that A, doesn't work and is probably making you fatter realistically long-term is a smart move, right? I mean, again, you can continue to diet, but it is only going to push you likely further and further sort of down the rabbit hole, if you will, right? Like dieting has gotten you to where you are today. Like I want you to really think about that and ask yourself if this is a strategy that you want to continue. Right. Now, again, we kind of talked about this earlier, but when it comes to body acceptance, maybe just start with like, I accept that I'm a biological animal and that my, you know, I have a weight that my body just naturally is inclined to be. Right. So when we think about, this is a little bit about weight set point theory, which is something that also people don't talk about. Weight set point theory is basically the idea, or it's just the concept, right, that our weight set point, this is the term that people use, right? Our weight set point is the weight that our body is sort of naturally arrive at in the context of quote unquote normal eating, right? So when we are not engaging in diet binge cycling, when we're not engaging in sort of dysfunctional food behaviors, when we're just quote unquote eating normally, mentally, healthfully, you know, just walking around like your average Joe Blow who just like, you know, has pizza sometimes, has salad sometimes he's at work and he gets really busy and forgets to eat lunch, but like other times he's like, oh, I'm going to have like the ice cream sundae today or whatever, right? Just like your general run of the mill average eater. Every average eater just has a weight that they're just going to end up at, that they're just genetically inclined to. That's just the way their body is, right? Like in the context of natural eating, right? In the context of just like whatever Joe Blow average eating, I arrive at this body. I've been this weight for now like 6 or 7 years, right? Maybe actually longer. I like lose track, right? Since about 2 years after I gave up dieting, I've been at this weight, which is important to know. It wasn't like, oh, I immediately arrived at this weight once I gave up dieting. It was like a couple of years of my body sort of like figuring it out. And I like gained some weight and like whatever. And then like 2 years later, I was just sort of at this weight. And I've pretty much just been at this weight ever since, right? But this is clearly my set point weight, right? Like I eat differently every day. I eat differently from month to month. My weight will go up like, you know, a little bit, a few pounds here, a few pounds there. But pretty much all of my clothes have just magically fit at this particular size for the past 8 years. In the context of me just not really worrying about food and just kind of eating whatever, right? And so I think that this concept of set point weight really is this idea that we just have this natural weight. Whatever this natural weight is, which again will be different for everyone, right? Genetics play a factor, environment plays a factor. There's all sorts of things that play a factor in set point weight. whatever our natural weight is, right, is the weight that we are going to eventually just naturally arrive at in the context of a mentally healthful, quote unquote, normal relationship with food, right? All you need to do is pursue sanity, right? I mean, that's how I describe it. All you need to do is pursue a mentally healthful, natural relationship with food. And over time, your body is just going to come to whatever is the physically healthful size for it. Again, that will be different for different people. It's not an overnight thing necessarily, right? Like my body sort of arrived here over the course of a couple of years after I gave up dieting, right? It was just sort of a, you know, in the beginning when I first gave up dieting, I was eating more cookies. Like I was eating more ice cream because guess what? I hadn't been allowing myself to eat those things my whole life, right? They were just naturally a little bit more exciting in the beginning. And then I kind of got bored and I was like, whatevs, you know? And so, yeah. And so I think that, I mean, this is all sort of a windy way of saying you basically have two options. You can keep doing what you've been doing, which will, I mean, if it's dieting, will probably, the strong probability is that it will end in binge eating and potentially more weight gain just forever and ever and ever until, you know, maybe you die one day, right? Or you can, again, cut your losses, get out of the game, just pursue healthful, mentally healthful, normal, average Joe Blow relationship with eating, right? Just work on your mental health first, mental health first, mental health first. When you are, when you've, I wouldn't say achieved mental health, but when you're generally practicing your life in a mentally healthful way, right, over time, and you get pretty good at just like thinking about food in a, again, average Joe Blow, natural sort of way, you know, for probably, you know, several months or maybe a couple years in a row, at some point your body's just going to stop changing. It's just going to be some weight. It's just going to be some weight that it just is comfortable at, right? It's going to be whatever genetically determined, environmentally determined weight your body just wants to be at, right? And we see this over and over and over again. This is what recovery looks like. Recovery is I pursue mental health first. I understand that whatever physical body I'm supposed to exist at when I'm mentally healthy will naturally arrive as a result of being mentally healthy, right? And I'm not in a rush to get there. I'm not trying to control the results. My only job is to pursue sanity and to just be cool with whatever arrives over time, which is what my, you know, general set point natural weight is.
Yeah. Beautiful, beautiful. And I can absolutely testify to that. Like, I didn't think that was possible. You know, it's like, I was always just so terrified of like, yeah, but I've always got to keep this under control. Cause when I was starving myself, if I ate just a little bit more, my body would just like, just put on weight because I was so underweight. Right. So a lot of times I explain it as like holding a cork under the water. Like people think like, oh, well, if I let go and I start gaining weight, they imagine the cork is just going to keep on going off into space. You know what I mean? Like, and then I'll be 5,000 pounds. And it's like, it feels scary because when you let go of the cork, it does. Like sometimes, right? You could gain weight, you could lose weight, you stay the same. But for those who gain weight.
Different bodies, different people. Yeah.
Exactly. You let go of the cork, it might pop up a little bit above the water.
Right.
But it's not going to go off into space. It's going to go boop, and it's just going to sit on the water, and it's going to be so natural.
Oh my gosh, I love that. I love that metaphor. Lydia, that is genius. I'm going to repeat that if you don't mind and quote you, and I'm going to reference you.
Read it throughout the world.
Okay, I'm going to reference
that. Cork theory.
That's brilliant. Yeah, great analogy.
Yeah, but just like don't be afraid of that first, because, you know, traveling up to the surface of the water feel scary, but like, just hold on. Right. So for women who are thinking of this in a way of like, just fear. So here's the fear, right? Like, cause those of you listening, I know your thoughts. There's this fear of like, but what if I get to this set point and it's not okay? Like, what if it's not the thinness or that, you know, it's like, it's not a body I can accept. So I would love to hear from you, Isabel. Like, so
I have a very specific response to that.
Okay, that's great. Well, let's do the specific response to that. Yeah, let's take it from there. Yeah.
The specific response to that is you don't have a choice. I mean, really. I mean, like, this is, it's very straightforward. I mean, like, you can wish until you're blue in the face that you can just magically diet, look like Gisele Bündchen, and stay there forever. But that is just not in alignment with science. Right? I mean, like, functionally speaking, it just does not matter what you wish your natural weight is. your natural weight is what it's going to be, right? Or not, maybe not right now, maybe not as right, but your natural weight is whatever your natural weight is, right? If you arrive at your natural weight and it's not something you're comfortable with, that's a body image problem. That's not something that can be overcome by dieting. That's not something that can be overcome by physical anything, because we know dieting doesn't work anyway. You are not capable of making yourself look a certain way. That's why models get paid hundreds of thousands of dollars and millions of dollars, because they're very rare, right? And so I think that, right, and like body diversity is real, right? You can't necessarily just change your body and make it look like whatever you want to look like. I always just say, all you can do is basically either diet binge cycle, probably push your weight up over in the long term, probably gain weight in the long term. That's one option. Or you can just accept your natural weight at whatever it is and do whatever body image work you need to do to at least get to the point of acceptance, right? To at least get to the point where you're like, okay, I can go outside and like be fine in this body.
Yeah.
Really, people aren't going to like this, but you actually don't necessarily have a choice. I mean, those are your realistic choices. The choice of, oh, I'm just going to diet to get down to the size I want to be and stay there is not a realistic, scientifically possible choice for 99.9% of people. For the vast, I'll say at least 95% to be fully clear. But I think, again, for binge eaters, it's much lower.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it's just sort of like, you just got to get hip to reality. And I think realistically, I think people think to themselves, and this is sort of getting into like the body image stuff a little bit more. I think people think to themselves, oh my gosh, well, if my natural weight's not okay, and like, I don't like it, I'm just going to die. Like all hell will break loose. I will just hate my life forever. And I think that's where body image work really comes into play. It's like, well, actually, there are things that you can do to change your relationship with your body. Like there are things that you can do to actually change your body image over time, right? And actually learn skills to look at yourself differently, think about yourself differently, feel differently about your body, right? And I think that is, negative body image is not necessarily permanent. Negative body image is actually much, much easier to change than our set point natural weights.
Beautiful. Beautiful. I love that answer. And just like hip with reality, right? It's like, well, how is this working for you? You know what I mean? Like, okay. So let's look at that. In fact, and I would love to hear your perspective on this, because this is not where I'm super educated, but from what I understand, you can, like, you have the set point weight, right? That your body's going to get to. And I've certainly seen that in my own body. Awesome. But you can change your set point weight. You can make it higher by dieting. So when you talk about like cutting your losses, it's like, okay, so you can cut your losses now and get back to your set point weight, or you can keep going with dieting and wrecking your metabolism and wrecking your mentality, and you can get to your set point weight later. It's just going to be higher.
Exactly. That's like for everyone who's like, maybe I'll just go on one more diet. Understand that for every diet you go on, you are risking metabolic damage that could actually end up pushing your quote natural weight up. Right? Whenever you cut the cord on dieting and whenever you let go and just pursue sanity and just pursue mental health, you're going to arrive at some set point weight that your body naturally wants to be at. The thing is that your natural set point weight can theoretically change over time, right? I mean, it does. It changes with age. It changes with hormone stuff. It changes with metabolism. If you want to push your set point weight up higher in the long term, right? So meaning when you actually are ready to let go of dieting, right? Like whatever that body is that you end up at, could theoretically, the longer you wait, basically you are risking raising your set point weight. You're risking raising your natural weight because dieting screws up your metabolism. So that's exactly correct. I mean, I think you said it perfectly. We don't know how to lower somebody's set point weight, right? There is no science. There's no evidence. There's no scientifically proven way to lower a person's set point weight. We have no idea how to do that. But we do know how to raise it, and that is through starvation, right? Or deprivation, dieting, basically like weight loss, right? Like when your body goes into, like when your body sort of temporarily loses weight, right? That is like your body's effectively biologically going into starvation mode. That's why it eats your fat cells, right? And so every time you weight cycle up and down, you're telling your body that food is a scarce resource that needs to be conserved, your metabolism slows down, and your body actually tries to hang on to more weight, raising your set point weight over time.
Yeah. And just from a biological perspective, like why would our bodies evolve or think that's a good idea to lower our set point rate? Like, oh, this person maybe is starving. Let's higher their set point rate so they hang on to more fat. But there's no reason for biology to be like, we care most about survival, so let's lower like a set point weight. It just doesn't work. So it's like, sorry, fashion doesn't match up with biology, but there we go. So I also want to just, you know, speak to, okay, so that's all nice and awesome. So how do we do that, right? Like, how do we get to the place where we have that body acceptance and maybe even that wonderfulness on top, you know, where we're moving up the spectrum to, you know, body love or, you know, body excitement or whatever it is. So what are some actual things that we can do? And just driving home the point of, you don't have to change your body to start accepting it. That's one thing. Like, I was in the cycle forever of like, well, I've just got to get to a body I can accept. No, you've got to get just accepting your body wherever it is. So how do we move toward that?
Well, so I think I'll say for me personally and for a lot of people I work with. So if you think about what the word acceptance means, acceptance doesn't even necessarily mean approval, right? Like, acceptance at its core just means I understand that it is what it is, what it is. Right? It's sort of like, it's like being willing to live life on life's terms, right? Like, my body is what my body is today, right? The way the sky is blue, right? Like, I don't need to like that the sky is blue in order to accept that it just is blue and there's nothing that I can do about that, right? Like, it is what it is today, right? And I would make the argument right now in this very moment, my body is what it is, right? Like, I have no choice to be like, oh, I'm going to try on a different body when I go get coffee this morning, right? Like, this is the only body I have in this moment. And I would make the argument that while theoretically I can change my body short term temporarily, which again, I wouldn't recommend for all of the reasons that we've talked about, long term, I really can't change my natural set point weight either, right? It's just, it's going to be what it's going to be. So acceptance, I think, starts to, for me personally, acceptance kind of comes from this understanding that diets don't work, right? If we really understood that diets don't work long-term, right? And that like our biology is not something that can be overcome, that understanding in and of itself, I think brings about some level of quote acceptance. Acceptance, again, being different than like or love, acceptance just being like, okay, fine. Life is what life is. The sky is blue and this is my body, right? The sky is blue and I can't look like Gisele Bündchen permanently forever, probably, right? That's why she gets paid millions of dollars, right? And so I think that that is, for as far as creating acceptance, I think a lot of creating acceptance is actually getting to the point in your dieting career where you're ready to cut your losses and you really understand like, ooh, do I really want to double down? Do I really want to bet another $100 on this? Like, do I really want to do that? Or am I now just starting to get into my kids' college fund? You know, that's, I think that that is functionally what acceptance is, right? And then once we're at acceptance and we're just like looking in the mirror and, you know, kind of like, oh, like, I hate my cellulite, I hate my this, I hate my that, then we start to get into a conversation about perception shifting, which has nothing to do with acceptance, right? Like, acceptance can happen irrespective of how we feel about something, irrespective of our opinions of liking or loving or not liking or whatever. Once we get to a point of acceptance, it's like, okay, it is what it is. The sky is blue. Sky's probably gonna be blue for a while. So I might as well think about, okay, well, can I start to see the sky being blue as like maybe a good thing? Like, maybe I can start to like that the sky's blue. It's sort of another example of this is like the 8 ounces of water, and there's 8 ounces of water in the glass, whether you choose to see it as half full or half empty, right? So first is just accepting that there's 8 ounces of water in the glass. Before I can even have a conversation about whether or not the glass is half empty or half full, first I just have to acknowledge there's 8 ounces of water in the glass either way, right? Like, before I can even have a conversation about half full or half empty, first just, okay, I get it, it's 8 ounces, and I accept that there is 8 ounces of water in the glass either way. Then I can have a conversation about whether or not I want to see it as half full or half empty. Then I can even start to perception shift between half empty and half full, right? From half empty to half full. So does that make sense? There's like sort of two steps.
Yeah, absolutely. Just accepting reality for what it is and then working on that. I know that like I just with my personal journey, it just started with being real, right? I think there are so many thoughts that we have. And that's a big thing that I teach is just thought awareness because everything stems from thoughts, right? So mm-hmm. I talk about this calling out the chatter. Like, there's this voice in your head, right? And just acknowledging it. Like, there are so many terrible thoughts that we have when we, you know, just about ourselves, about other women's bodies that are just kind of like developed and, you know, fed to us that are really so terrible that we don't look at them. Like, we don't listen to them. And I think that a really helpful first step that I know was part of my own journey was just looking at that. Like, okay, I look in the mirror and there's a thought in my head that there is no way that that could ever be beautiful, that reflection.
Right.
And
right.
Instead of just like, no, that's a horrible thought. Like, I just have to change my body because these thoughts are so scary. Just like, okay, there it is. The acceptance, the reality. There is that thought, right?
Yes.
And just that awareness of those thoughts, I think can help us to see, especially when we start getting into the dark thoughts of like how we think about other women's bodies and the way that we judge others when we hate our own bodies, like thoughts can't hurt us, but right. Awareness, as soon as you're aware of them, then you can start accepting them or changing them or just, you know, having that shift. And then it went to like, okay, well now I look in the mirror and well, I don't think that's a good looking body, but someone probably would. There's probably someone in the world that would look at my reflection and be like, oh, that's cool. I mean, I don't like it. And then it was like, oh, well, you know, maybe the curves on my body are what actually make it pretty. Like, it's not like this isn't what makes it ugly. It's what makes it pretty. And like, so it's just this kind of slow evolution. I really feel like just like our set point weight, we have a set point like happiness in our brains.
Yeah.
If we kind of let it happen, like, I think that it's natural to like the body that we have, not even like it, but just accept it. Like, hey, that's a body, you know,
yeah.
And like not feel so charged about it. So if we just kind of let it happen, you know?
Totally. Yeah. I mean, it's like first, yeah, I love that. First accepting the thoughts, then worrying about perception shifting, right? It's like, okay, well maybe I can start to see it a little bit differently. Like, ooh, maybe I can challenge this thought or maybe I can challenge that thought or, you know, I love all of that. I think that that's perfect. Well, very well said. Yeah. And also like making, I think the only reason why people don't do this from day one is because they don't have the goal of changing their relationship with their body. They're so focused on like, I just got to change my food. You know, that they don't even realize how important it is to create, to have a goal of perception shifting on our bodies. People, I would say, who say, oh, I could never have a positive relationship with my body. I could never have a positive. Most of them, for the most part, have not earnestly tried to perception shift for any extended period of time. And I think that that's people who really pursue perception shifting around body as a goal with as much fervor, right? Pursuing positive body image with the same amount of fervor that you once pursued dieting with, right? Like if you put half the energy that you used to put into dieting into trying to change your thoughts about your body, trust me, you would see wild results that you will never see permanently with dieting, right? And so I think a lot of it is also just like, can you earnestly just show up and actually start trying to perception shift with your body, right? It's not an overnight thing that will happen, but you actually do have the ability to change the way you think about your body. And those thoughts are permanent, right? Like those changes are sustainable. Those changes are, you know, something that we can hang on to. We're dieting, we cannot. Yeah. So yeah, I think that's great.
Neuroplasticity, baby. We can change our brains. And that's a gift that just keeps on giving. Just, you know, a testament to that, like there is such freedom in body acceptance. I had no idea. Like I saw the importance. I started out with like, well, I've got to figure out how to do this body work because it's just messing up my relationship with food so much. And I've got to do it, right? Like there was a functional purpose, but I had no idea what incredible freedom came from just being okay. Like when I first started out, I would be just sitting in my life. I would be sitting somewhere and I would start thinking about the fat on my body. And I would start thinking about the way my stomach felt against my jeans. And like, I would break out into tears and my day would be over. Like I was just so just obsessed and sad about my body all the time. And it's like, you can't escape your body right then. Like, I just remember that feeling of like, I'm trapped in this body that I hate. And it was that sort of life, like daily. And now it's at the point where it's like, you know, and it didn't take, it wasn't like 5 years of hard work. It was like, it was just that consistent, effortful body work where now I'm like, yeah, like I don't think that I have this like model body that should be put up on a pedestal, and that's fine. Like, I'm okay with that, but I have my body, and like, it does cool stuff, and like, I can like feel, and I can do things, and I can live, and like, I have a heart, and I have lungs, and there's just this gratitude around my body that, and I don't think about it. Like, it doesn't take up any, hardly any mental space throughout my day, and that freedom is just amazing. And one of the first sort of times that I was exposed to this was Isabel Fox and Duke on a podcast, and you were a huge part of the beginning of that journey. I just want to thank you for the work that you do for my own life and for other women's lives, because I think this is so, so important, and I'm just incredibly grateful for your voice.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much. Such an honor to be here, and yeah, a pleasure. So glad, and thank you so much for everyone who has got it to this point in the interview for continuing to listen. This has been awesome.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for being back on. I loved what our conversation became today. There's such great things here. So thank you for being on the show. Would love to, of course, have you back on sometime. I just think that there are some great things here. And I would just say, just try it, right? It's like the hardest part of going for a run is putting on your shoes, right? So don't commit to like, well, this is the day where I'm giving up diet mentality. I mean, if you want to, that's fine. But even just like, you know, what if I just tried that on for today? You know, just like, maybe I'll just like dip my toe in it and see what happens, you know, just like start wherever that is, whatever the next step is for you. So beautiful.
One step at a time with this stuff. Yeah, definitely. It's a process.
For you, Isabel, is there anything on your mind that is like, oh, you know what? Like, I don't feel like this would be complete unless we were able to bring that up. Like, do you feel like it's complete, or do you feel like there's something out there that you would like to add?
I feel good about this interview. I feel like we really talked about a lot. I'm like, I'm going to be impressed with like everyone who got through to the end of this interview, because we covered a ton of stuff. And yeah, this was really exciting, and I feel good.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, thank you so much for being on. Thank you guys for tuning in. This is Isabel Fox and Duke and Lydia, the lifestyle coach. And we are now signing off, but go ahead and click on the link below and be sure to, did you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. If anyone thinks that I'm not like fully crazy after this, if anyone's interested in these sort of concepts and ideas, definitely check out my video training series called Stop Fighting Food. Lydia has the link in the show notes. And Stop Fighting Food is a really, really great, super great introduction to a lot of sort of certainly my core like methodology, if you will, for lack of a better word. And yeah, and you'll learn a ton about sort of thinking about food in a different way. And you know, it sort of gets you down this whole sort of educational process on the internet that I think will be really fun for anyone who's struggling with binge eating, emotional eating, you know, just feeling crazy around food in general. Definitely check out the video series, Stop Eating Food, that Lydia has linked to below.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for creating that. That'd be a great place for you guys to start. Some wonderful content there. Thank you for putting that out there. Check it out, you guys. Subscribe to this channel for new videos every Monday for just like good stuff, for a good life. And there'll be more fun stuff to come. So thank you so much for being on. This is Isabel and Lydia signing off. Mwah.
Thanks for tuning in. If you felt a spark here and want to see how these principles can work in your own life, here is your next step. Pop over to lydialifestyle.com/session. That's lydialifestyle.com/session, where you can book a free session with our team. We'll give you a call and together find clarity on three things. 1, the exact cycle you keep getting sucked into. 2, what isn't working with your approach. And 3, what's missing to close the gap between food prison and food freedom. We have helped free hundreds of women all over the world from their food struggles. These are proven principles that work, no matter how long you've been stuck. This is Lydia, the Lifestyle Coach, signing off. Mwah!